Yep, I heard about it. He died better than he lived, in my opinion. Makes me mad to think about how he led a bunch of good people to their death. But now we have a chance to start fresh, build something even better. I've already had my feelers out for recruits. But let me know if you're interested. We could use you. Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix, broadcasting as a proud member of the Shadowcasters Network, I am Opti. Welcome to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. Well, here it is. We finally made it to the end of Season 3. Who'd have thunk that little crows from all over the Sixth World would be sticking around this long to keep bashing themselves in the foreheads with truth? Me, that's who. I'm proud of you and what we've accomplished here. There is some fantastic stuff ahead. Season 4 will be with us up until 2074 and will complete the Corporation episodes. There's also going to be some special stuff added in along the way. But first, a few questions from our listeners for our Dear Opti segment.
Hey Opti, it's Hammer here from the Pacific Northwest. Hope you can hear me okay. The phones here aren't troll compliant or troll friendly or whatever. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm calling because I'm a little concerned about my bloody Twitch that I've been running with. Seems real checked out lately, like just sits and stares at the wall, or I thought that maybe he was depressed, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So then I thought maybe BTO burnout, but he doesn't do those. I mean, he doesn't even do drugs anymore. So I thought maybe some action would help him out. We ran into these gangers, and after a pretty hairy scrape, I said, "Boy, that gets the heart going." And Twitch looks at me and says, "My heart rate is beating at 76 beats per minute," pointing at the readout on his metal arm. Now, I've heard the term cyber zombie. I don't know a lot about technology or magic. So I was hoping you knew what qualifies somebody to be a cyber zombie or make somebody a cyber zombie. Hopefully there's something else at play here. My buddy's a dwarf in his mid-30s. Lots of cyber. More metal than meat. I'll be listening for your answer, Opti.
Well, thanks, Hammer. I'm sorry to hear about your buddy Twitch acting so strangely. Sounds like you guys go back quite a while, and the difference in his attitude and personality must be quite difficult and more than a bit upsetting. There are two things that come to mind when you discuss your pal. The first, as you said, is summed up by the word cyberzombie. Cyberzombie is what runners call someone that has been so cybered up that they lose their grip on humanity and become something more like a machine. Now, it can be easy to think of that as a brain problem. We can usually wrap our minds around someone getting too much of their brain replaced with tech and actually think more like a machine than a person. But that doesn't really get at the heart of the matter. What really happens is that every time we connect foreign material into our body and integrate them into our nervous system, it doesn't just affect our brain. It affects that mystical or spiritual part of you as well. Living things create a manosphere around them, which is really a completely different show. But the point is, when we get a living part of us removed and replaced with a non-living part integrated into our body, we lose a bit of that spark of mana. Some call it spirit or soul, ki perhaps works, or maybe just thinking about our holistic selves, but I can't really put a value on that. I know a really good loyal chummer of mine who has tons of cyber, but in the end, I have noticed that even when cyber isn't in the brain, it begins to affect his attitude. He became less connected to the living world around him. It's almost like part of their brain adapts and rewires itself to align with the whole of its new parts. So, long story short, there is a limit beyond which your connection to the manosphere or soul or spirit becomes too damaged or severed. At that point, people begin to operate on autopilot. Often they just keep doing whatever it was they were doing before, but with no drive or passion or desire or reason, just habit. Alternatively, they exist just to fill the will of someone else, like a pal or a commander or corporate boss. There really isn't anything you can do at that point. If there is some Twitch still left in there, nurture that. Try to remind him of the things he used to like. See if that can rewire some of his brain. But if he's too far gone, the best you can do is maybe slot a BTL into him of a personality you like and try to move on. Now, there is a slightly more sinister possibility, not one that I'm willing to discuss here, but that is CFD, Cognitive Fragmentation Disorder, the Sybil virus, if you will. I hope it isn't that, for your sake. This next question comes from Trey. Dear Opti, in your opinion, what is an ethical way to treat security forces encountered on a run gone bad? Equal force, live rounds for live rounds, gel for gel, or anything necessary to escape? Doesn't matter if people die as long as I get out. Well, thanks for the question, Trey. In order to answer this, it's important to know that Opti is no saint. I'm going to answer the question, not in terms of how I have or would handle it, but how I think it should best be handled. And also, please understand that I never play judge when it comes to those fighting the corpse and the tactics they use when survival's on the line. Having said that, I think that the big lie that the corps and nations have convinced everyone of is that we are at odds with the security forces we encounter. What I mean is this. There's a wider difference between the CEO of a corp and the security guard than there is between the security guard and the runners who encounter him. The CEO is all about control and selfishness. Both runners and the guards are more or less about survival and simple getting by. The rich and powerful have convinced wage slaves, salarymen, and corporate security that they are on the same side as the CEO and the shareholders, and that Shadowrunners and the Sinless are the bad guys, and so they can act in what they think is their best interest while all along, the brainwashed corporate masses are being crushed beneath the same capitalist weight as the Shadowrunners. So, long way to get where I'm going, but I advise a minimum amount of force when dealing with any opposition on runs, even when things go badly. Perhaps I have it easier since, as an awakened person, I'm privileged with a spell repertoire that can easily disable groups without doing any lasting harm, so I won't judge the unawakened for doing what they need to do. But I will also say that I carry around my trusty narcoject pistol just in case magic isn't prudent, and there's a lot of non-lethal options out there for today's Shadowrunner. But like I said, not everyone even buys into all this do-gooder crap, so I don't expect anyone to care much about what I have to say. But for those that do, you were all blind once. Try to have a shred of compassion for those whose minds aren't as free as yours, and try not to kill someone today who might turn out to be an ally tomorrow. Hope that helps, Trey. This next question comes from Andrew Shrimbry. Dear Opti, what is your opinion on the wireless matrix somehow being a metaplane? Well, that's an interesting question, Andrew. I am probably not a great one to ask about this, as I really suck when dealing with the Matrix. My tech guy does most of that, and DeForest helps me with the rest. But like you, I have long been curious about the possibility, especially when I began hearing about otaku and then technomancers describing the Matrix in terms that I recognize from my astral experiences. So after many interviews with those who will remain nameless for their safety, my current hypothesis is that the Matrix itself is not a metaplane, but that at certain points, technomancers call them resonance wells, the Matrix intersects with something like a metaplane. We might call it resonance, or perhaps another metaplane called dissonance. This metaplane is not like traditional metaplanes, but perhaps runs parallel to astral space, in that they never intersect, but operate similarly. One of my contacts in the Sealy Court gave me some credence to this when describing a sort of metaplanar interaction that allows certain items to function on that metaplane in ways eerily similar to how our Matrix functions, but without the technological aspects, much in the same way technomancers do. Take that with a grain of salt, as I really don't know what I'm talking about. And our last question comes from Chris. Dear Opti, what would it take for you to set up shop as a fixer in the Columbia, South Carolina sprawl, temporarily? Well, just Nuyen, chummer. Truthfully, I need a change of scenery once in a while. Some of you know that I've been splitting my time recently between Chicago and my old squat in Redmond, Seattle. It's good to travel, so I could always use some time somewhere else. Keeps my enemies on their toes as well. Thanks, Chris. Keep those questions coming in. You can get them to me on the Face Matrix or shoot me a message at opti@neoanarchist.com, and I will make your lives enhanced by answering them. And now, a bit of fan mail from our old friend, the Anonymous Corpse Sucker.
Well, 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 Opti. Up to your usual tricks, I see. Though, I do have to give you credit, going after the big A like you are. For that, here's a little tip for your run of friends. Don't get too comfortable with any of the corporations. They pay well. Believe me, I know. But they all come with strings attached. Work too long for Ares, they'll put a couple of stripes on your shoulder, start saluting. Work too long for Neonet, they'll plug things into your head. Horizon, they'll want to film everything. But the big A, work too long for them, and they'll ask you to give. And much worse, they'll ask you to take. Opti, since you're up to your usual tricks, we'll be up to ours. Be seeing you.
Thanks, Anonymous Corpse Sucker, but we'll just keep doing things the way we've always done them. And so we head back into the fraught waters of a decade hence and discuss the discussables from 2069. First, as always, the geopolitical landscape of 2069. On January 21st, the UCAS hero General Angela Colleton is inaugurated and becomes the newest president of the UCAS. Meanwhile, on the West Coast, the California Free State, metahumans continue to be disproportionately targeted by the government under rogue General Saito. With the help of Ares Macro Technology, among other corporations, the activist group Mothers of Metahumans rallied support and gave General Saito the boot from Cali, making it much more free than its name used to imply. On May 10th, in the UK, Princess Caroline is coronated as the Queen of England 5 days after King George VIII dies. I find myself wondering what Johnny Spinrad was thinking at that moment, knowing that he could have been king, or at least consort to the queen, if he hadn't ruined their engagement back in the day. Over in Munich, riots erupted when it is revealed that a doctor at Martins Reed University Hospital had been involuntarily sterilizing metahuman women who were being treated there. And on December 24th in Congo, I don't mind saying that something pretty cool happened. A group of awakened creatures and tribal shamans, calling themselves the Kobikela, took over a sprawl in Congo called the Kinshasa-Brazzaville. The Kobikela flat-out informed the corporate interests that the Kinshasa-Brazzaville is the new capital of the Congolese tribal lands, and everyone there is now under Kobikela jurisdiction. Way to take it to Mr. Congo! I'm going to mix geopolitics and magic here for a few minutes as we discuss what happened to California in 2069. On March 8th, at 9:57 a.m., two colossal earthquakes, measuring 9.2 and 9.6 on the Richter scale, shook the west coast along the San Andreas Fault and the San Pedro Shelf Fault. Afterwards referred to as the Twins, these quakes were literally felt around the world. The epicenter was Los Angeles, and most everything around it was devastated. Giant sinkholes opened and consumed entire city blocks. As an immediate result, Mount Rainier erupted near Seattle and caused smaller eruptions into the early 2070s, which rained ash on Seattle sprawl repeatedly. Fires spread throughout the city, fueled by broken natural gas lines, and untold aftershocks fed a tsunami, which pounded the west coast and flooded part of L.A. When all was said and done, nearly 100,000 people were killed. Beyond L.A., much of Southern California and California's Central Valley were also heavily damaged. For reasons not understood at the time, it appeared that much of Southern California and Central California had dropped below sea level, causing floodwaters to rush in and wreak havoc on the landscape. Much of what had existed before became islands cut off from the vastly different California coastline. California's Bay Area was not hit nearly as hard, and neither were many wealthy areas which sat at higher elevations or had long ago constructed fortifications against sea level increases. Many thought the floodwaters would recede after a few years, but it's been a decade, and no such luck. This phenomenon of the lost elevation, causing 80% of LA to fall underwater, has become known as the Fall. All throughout the year, the Native American nations chipped in to offer aid to homeless, hungry, and hurting Californians. Some bits of LA that were underwater were just an inch or two submerged, but other parts were much deeper. Overall, topographical studies showed that on the whole, L.A. dropped an elevation on average of 110 meters. Science offered no solutions as to why this happened, noting that the geography simply didn't support anything in the ground that could have allowed this sinking to happen. Outside of planetary-level extinction events, nothing could be strong enough to make it happen. It appeared that sinkholes had opened up beneath the entire city and swallowed it. Later, once underwater salvage crews began going under, they found large openings leading to an even larger submerged cavern. This cavern turned out to be only one of many such caverns among a network of tunnels and caves. This enormous network spans the entirety of LA and much of the rest of Southern California. Mages confirmed that the worst hit locations also happened to be areas of particularly high background counts and astral strangeness. This network of underwater caverns and caves was named the Deep Lacuna, after the Latin word for a hollow or a gap. And now, magical theorists believe that the Deep Lacuna is a form of semi-permanent Alkara, or ancient version of space and time magically imposing itself onto the present. They believe that when the Alkara fades, things will go back to normal, if it ever fades. It's worth noting that all the tunnels are roughly metahuman size. Further, there are pockets of air in some of the tunnels that reveal fairly advanced sigils, carvings, and statues from an unknown but ancient source. It appeared that at some point in the past, the area below California was home to an enormous underground dwelling of some sort, although why an entire civilization would choose to live underground remained a mystery. One of the interesting results of the Twins, the Fall, and the Deep Lacuna is that, other than Horizon, few corps have been willing to invest any large amounts of New Yen into rebuilding LA for fear that their money would vanish if another event presents itself. One of the other results of the Lacuna is the phenomenon of the Lagoon Preachers. These charismatic, or more often insane, leaders have gathered quite a following, insisting that the Deep Lacuna is an area that was once struck down in ancient history by God or another deity as a result of some great sin among the people. One of these Lagoon Preachers even claimed that he found an ancient city in one of the caverns beneath LA. This guy claimed that there was some sort of scourge that caused the ancients to hide there. As for me, some of you may remember I was in California last summer, and I did some astral traveling to the Deep Lacuna. In case you're interested, my own personal discoveries can confirm what the Lagoon Preachers are saying. There was indeed a civilization down there, and there was indeed an incredibly large number of people that could have been housed there. Further, some of the writings had mana leftovers clinging to them, and all the other writings I was able to see from the astral confirmed that this was not the only underground civilization in the past, and that others also tried to hide from some ancient scourge. What it all means is a mystery to me, so if any of you have answers, let me know. I am deeply interested. No pun intended. Moving from the strange to the all-too-mundane and evil, here are the corporate goings-on of 2069. On March 8, in the UCAS, Dr. Carolyn Winters, CEO of Manodyne at the time, disappeared. To this day, no one knows exactly what happened to her. Normally, I'd be troubled by the fact that my network of little crows hasn't been able to find anything about her disappearance. However, in digging, I did find something about her past that might make her vanishing make more sense. Winters was a well-known mage, and at one point made a deep dive into the metaplanes. My crows confirmed that there were many within Manodyne that swear when she came back she was nothing like the Caroline that they knew before. And as a result, those who tried to get more info usually ended up dead. But I think a spirit hitchhiked its way back from a metaplane into her body. And with the changes in the astral as a result of the Lacuna, the spirit either abandoned its body or no longer found Winters to be hospitable and left. That's just a guess, though. Malcolm Grant took over as CEO of Manodyne, and after stocks tumbled as a result of her going missing, she was declared dead in 2071, and her stock went to her brother Kale. This next bit is just typical of the worst sentience on Earth. In May, what used to be Nambia, the Angolan military took over two contested diamond fields. Universal Omnitech also sent their troops in, which made the whole area a militarized conflict zone, all over a resource that is relatively plentiful, relatively without purpose, and extracted with what amounts to worse than slave labor. Ugh, metahumanity. If you check back to the Shiawase upload I made a year or so back, you will find reference there to the Yamana Doctrine within Shiawase. In 2069, Empress Hitomi Shiawase backed the Yamana Doctrine, even though the Shinto board was against it. This began what became known as the Shiawase Shadow War. Did I ever tell you crows that Hitomi Shiawase is a technomancer, used to run the shadows? I normally wouldn't out technos, but as the Empress of Japan and the head of a Big Ten corp, I think she can handle herself. Sliding into tech news, the Kilimanjaro Mass Driver came online in 2069. If you aren't a techie, a mass driver is a sort of electromagnetic catapult used to accelerate and catapult payloads into space as an alternative to using rockets. And while I think this is not truly a tech story, I'm going to put this next one here anyway. In 2069, Misuhama floored everyone with their outing of Virtua Kinetics, or Technomancers, to the public at large by releasing the findings of MIT&T Project AR-01.03.68. That project, which was intended to study AR and VR interaction with empathetic feedback, instead ended up as a discovery of sorts when one of their patients ended up being a technomancer and performing their skills, as it were, before an audience of well-prepared scientists. In the wake of that report, technomancers became feared and in many cases hunted for their ability to interact with the Matrix without use of technology, instead using only their selves. Patient V, who was the one responsible for this discovery, is later extracted unwillingly and not heard from again. On April 15th, symbionts, or little microscopic creatures living in your blood that enhance your abilities, hit the world market. Sort of related to that, in July in Portland, or Kara Sur if you're fancy, Sutter Krupp unveiled the first large buildings ever created solely using nanotechnology. This next bit belongs just as much in the magic as the tech department, but 2069 saw the debut of the Petite Broom grenade from Esprit. It's a smoke grenade that hampers astral perception. It actually uses the Strain 2 beta version of Fab2B within and an explosion of water vapor. I hate them personally. In Magic News, 2069 had reports that effects of the huge drop of anti-astral Fab 3 virus in Chicago had started to lessen, but left behind a large ebb in the manosphere around Chicago. And I can verify this one personally, Crows. The mana was pretty bad with Fab 3 for a while, but after a year or two, it just became sort of empty. Now things are actually almost back to normal. That probably sounds better than the truth, but living here actually helps the Awakened to adapt, so I hardly notice the flutter anymore unless I've been somewhere else for an extended period of time. I don't want to spend too much time on this next one, as I don't particularly like giving credence to self-regulatory agencies, but in 2069, the fascists at the American Association for the Advancement of Thaumaturgy, or AAAT, along with the other bootlicking orgs that follow their lead, finally deigned to recognize shamanistic studies as a valid degree path. Thanks for nothing, fraggers. Also in 2069, the entity known as GAF, which had caused quite a stir by offering non-awakened and burnouts the chance to use magic, began to stop offering packs to new converts in the Aleph Society. This, of course, dried up cult recruitment pretty quick. The head of Aleph tried to force GAF to accept more converts, but instead, the second-in-command, Sierra LaGuardia, sacrificed Nixon to GAF and took over the cult. Here is some magic-related news about the infected. In 2069, new HMHVV2 expressions are discovered and labeled harvesters. First discovered in Houston, harvesters were elves before infection. They became muscular with much thicker skin and, most disturbing, curved blade-like talons resembling scythes. Also in 2069, the body of Tamir Gray, missing since 57, was discovered and buried at the Ghoultown Memorial in Chicago. Gray even succeeded in getting the UCAS to recognize ghouls' rights for a while. And the section that is just as important as the others, at least in your hearts, the culture of 2069. In rapid fire, the tween singer Taiko Ikemoto starts singing at elite nightclubs where she sings exclusively for rich folks. The 1930 film Maltese Falcon, remade in 1941, starring Humphrey Bogart and Mary Astor, and reproduced 17 times since, got a remake in 2069, out on SimChip, which flopped terribly and lost Horizon a ton of nuyen. Synaptic goes on to its new Darwin tour around the Pacific, combining strong VR with live performance, and the Tolson Twins release their album Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Hackers. And that is that. Before I go, I want to give a shout to a runner who is a little down on his luck. I met Hood about 5 years ago. He's a real young guy, super polite too. He's an elf raccoon shaman, and those that pay attention know that crows and raccoons often get into the same sort of trouble. Anyway, he's from the Redmond Barrens, just down the street from my Redmond safe house. Anyway, he's always stealing just to get by, but he's always leaving notes to say, sorry. Like I said, polite. He mostly digs jobs that involve stealing, and he often gives some portion of his findings to others. Anyway, he got locked up for about 5 years, and he just got out. He hit me up asking for work, but I'm not in Seattle at the moment, so if any of you fixers out that way give him some work, I'll be eternally grateful. And he's a good kid. While I'm doing shoutouts, I want to give a huge thank you to the human street samurai called Ember. The last time I was in Hamburg, she corrected a bit of intel for me that really saved my hoop. And now I hear she's locked in a Proteus Arcology in the North Sea due to the aforementioned CFD, and she's looking to get out of there unharmed. Any runners in the area are encouraged to lend a hand. Opti always pays his debts. Speaking of debts, you owe it to yourself to stop wasting entirely good slots of time listening to the Neo-Anarchist podcast. In closing, I want to give a hearty hello to our newest Patreon supporters, which receive monthly offerings of Neo-Anarchist street gear. Freshly included in this illustrious list of capable crowfunters is Jason Gunter, Bishada, Timothy Noble, Brennan Blair, Adam Finn Grotjohn, A. Scott, and Gibson Arcade. Thank you all. Everything you need to set up and maintain a neo-anarchist cell in your area, which, at various levels now includes new stickers every month, patches, dice bags, fake IDs of all sorts, contact sheets for Opti and his crew, USB cred sticks, sweet neo-anarchist shirts, whiskey glasses, temporary tattoos, and an upcoming album of Sixth World Musical Malarchy will be delivered to your safe house as we march bravely on. And I should note that we are only a small bit away from the next Patreon level that unlocks the dog tag rewards for a specific Six World organization, which shall remain nameless until the unlock, since I don't want the corpse breathing down my neck. But stay tuned, I just might talk about them soon. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanimium 88. This was the Neo-Anarchist Podcast, and I am your host, the Blue Sky, Never Say Die, Whiskey and Rye, By and By, Good Guy, Mile High, Never Lie, My Oh My, End Is Nigh, Pecan Pie, Poli Sci, Own No Tie, Always Ask Why, Bright-Eyed Host, Opti. Enjoy your freedom, unless you have CFD and can't, because you don't have freedom anymore. You don't really have you anymore. I suppose that you could share your freedom with your brain thief, but that is kind of codependent and not really freedom, methinks.